The attacks on two mosques in Christchurch last week left 50 people dead and scores injured. That violence has rocked the people of New Zealand and Australia and horrified Muslim communities worldwide. People say, police say the offender allegedly had links to alt-right extremist groups, and that's raised questions about whether enough is being done to curb this type of radical activism. Can we prevent these kinds of violent attacks in the future? Professor Jeff Dean from Griffith University's Criminology Department joins us now via Skype. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Hilary. Thanks for having me on the program.
It's a pleasure. Traditionally, when we talk about terrorism, Jeff, white supremacists mostly haven't been included in that conversation. Why have they been so invisible generally?
Well, I think it's those who commit the most atrocities, as is ISIS and Al-Qaeda before them, obviously grab the news, the headlines, and the dollars that government put into it. I've always had the view that when you talk about terrorism, you're really talking about three groups. You're talking about, the terrorists, as in Islamic and Al-Qaeda and so forth. Then you're talking about right-wing extremists and militants. And then you're talking about shooters, school shooters and so forth. They're acts of terrorism. But the other two don't get as much airplay. Now they will, of course, in terms of right-wing extremism, and that's clearly where an emphasis has to be now.
So what was your reaction when you heard about this attack?
Just terribly saddened. I mean, it's just not unexpected, unfortunately. I have been suspecting this was going to happen, and it's just a question of when. And unfortunately, it still is a question of when. I don't think we've seen the last of this because of the toxic beliefs that are out there held by right-wing extremists.
And so you're saying that the views will inevitably lead to violence, or just that not enough is being done to stop them where it might be in other realms?
Look, it's not as a simple a diagnosis as that. I mean, violent extremism, it's a simple pathway but a complex trajectory, if I can use that term. By that I mean, look, it's simple in the sense that people become attracted to extreme ideas, they become obsessed with it, ultimately, if they become fixated, then yes, that's when they then are thinking about getting activated and carrying out the sort of atrocities we've seen recently in New Zealand. That's the linear simple view, but the complexity is that individuals have a whole lot of pressures on them, a whole lot of other incidences that create the context whereby they will go on to do that. But the issue is 90% of people that have extreme views will never do anything with them. There will only be a few that will go on to actually carry out an attack. So it's a needle in a haystack problem. That's the difficulty.
The alleged perpetrator of the Christchurch attacks was quoting extreme right-wing views. But I'm wondering if we can talk about those terms, alt-right, far-right, white supremacist. Are they interchangeable, or should we make distinctions?
Well, I think you have to... I mean, they are interchangeable at one level, but it's important to make distinctions between, and certainly my research that I had done a few years ago about, groups like this in Australia, is that there's really an old style and a new style, and they both have different ways of sort of pushing their agenda, which is similar in terms of they want to make racism, fashionable again. But the issue with the old school is that they're the ones that I suspect our fellow in New Zealand is from, the white supremacists that have the view that violence really is necessary to push their views. And people, groups like Blood and Honour and, Southern Cross Hammerskins, they're representative of that sort of group. And it's all about the negative messaging. It's all about anti-immigration, anti-establishment, and the use of violence if necessary. Whereas the new groups, the new right, they want to soften that message. So they are really into sanitising that view because they want to win electoral votes and have the power to bring in repressive laws to outlaw and target the groups they don't like.
So you did a study in 2016 that has brought forth a lot of this understanding. What are the common beliefs? I think there were six that you found between those groups.
Yeah, well, as I said, the negative side, you have the ones that, you know, the old style that believe in anti-establishment, anti-immigration. I mean, obviously the new do as well, but the new try to put a spin on it by talking about the protection of Western values and democratic reform. So they propose a solution where the old school don't have a solution, they just have violence, okay? Whereas the new school are trying to, as I said, rehabilitate the concept of racism to make it modern and fashionable and to give it this sort of spin of we're protecting Western values, we're patriotic, we're trying to, keep Australia safe, all that sort of messaging. They all have the view that they want to return to traditional values, which is that ultra-conservative sort of view, and they all have a view that when they get in power, or if they gain power, they want a strong state, which is obviously an authoritarian sort of repressive way of going about business, which is really spends, you know, it's the death knell of democracy as we know it, if that comes about. But I think... What is so insidious is that unfortunately their message does have a resonant, reverberate throughout society because people are fearful, people worry for their jobs, globalization. I mean, I think the problem from my point of view with right-wing extremists is not necessarily that their analysis of the issues facing society is wrong. The problem is always their solution. The solution is always going to end up as an authoritarian one.
What's interesting to me too is that things like the return to traditional values are not necessarily great for women, and yet there are groups like Women for Aryan Unity. Is there a tradition of female involvement here?
No, not really. They're a very small group. But I mean, and again, I mean, that's just an example of how people can distort their view of sort of reality to fit in with where their own sort of needs are. I mean, that's a sort of a neo-Nazi sort of group, and for whatever reason, some women become attracted to that.
So I guess the question is more, what's the demographic of those groups?
That's so much so. And I mean, that's what traditional values. I mean, the thing is, when they talk about traditional values, and this is where governments and the community generally, they need to wake up to actually target and zero in on those toxic beliefs and actually challenge them to say, well, actually, what do you mean when you say traditional values? Give me your version of it, because they're never good at actually explaining that, because it can't be explained in nice terms when it's stripped bare. It will mean, you know, men are the head of the house, if you like, and women are in the kitchen. You know, that sort of stupidity, and it's you know, the male domination thing. We've just seen so much of that, and yet no one actually challenges them in their beliefs. Because they're a wonderful, clever marketing tool to say we believe in traditional values. Well, who doesn't? But what do you actually mean by that?
So, Professor Jeff Dean, criminologist from Griffith University, if I can ask you, who's in these groups? What's attracting the people that are attracted to these groups?
Well, it's a bit what we saw in the Trump phenomenon. There was a range of people. It isn't just young, impressionable white males, which is certainly probably the majority, you would think. I mean, it's hard to get a demographic. They don't publish their details like that. And who are their, 63,000 subscribers on Facebook to Reclaim Australia? We don't have the demographics in that way. But one would expect there's obviously a fair percentage of white Australians, young males, because they're lost, they find life meaningless, they find it stressful. It's just, it gives them a mission, a purpose, and a meaning beyond what they don't have. But there's also the average person in the street who, the mums and dads who think, Well, yeah, we're fearful for our future. We want to have a better future. And these people are saying we have a solution. And so it's attracting a lot of people from quite a broad range. Although, as I said, the core would have to be white males, you know, young males.
And are there early warning signs that flag points where you might be able to step in and help people if they are looking at going down this path towards extremism?
Yeah, look, yes, there are. I mean, it begins in the head. You know, it begins with their thinking. That's the point. Because ultimately, when you break down any of their messaging and their beliefs, it's a simplistic black and white view of the world. There is actually no sophistication there. There's no grey. Everything to them is black and white. You're either for us or against it. It's sort of rubbish. That, you know, you're either one of us or you're one of them. It's the us and them, the black and white, the right and wrong. That sort of formulation underpins everything they do. Now, that's a very unsophisticated way of looking at the world. The world is much more complex than a simple black and white solution. And so that's where the targeting needs to look at those toxic beliefs and unpick them and the way they distort information and distort reality to produce this black and white view. I mean, interestingly, if we can talk about the Tarrant, the fellow who responsible for obviously the massacres in New Zealand. If you know, the media sources are saying that he had the view that these people who he shot were invaders. Now, that very use of the term invaders is right-wing language. And yet, they distort reality because migrants and refugees, they don't come here because they want to. They're fleeing famine, civil war, persecution in their countries. And yet, they talks about them as invaders. I mean, what a distortion of reality that is.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that they're such a sophisticated marketing outfit, and there's the argument that the names of alleged perpetrators shouldn't be mentioned because it just gives them more airtime. Should we be talking about this right now, Jeff, or is this just giving the alleged Christchurch attacker what he wants?
No, I don't think so. I think we're using him as a tragic case example of the sort of way these people are manipulated, and clearly he was, in terms of indoctrinating himself and through others in the people he had contact with and the websites he would have looked at, to come to that sort of toxic belief, to view migrants and immigrants as invaders. And yet, you know, that's the very thing we need to have a discussion about, is to say to people, look, wake up with what the messages that you are getting and what you are told, and check it out and see, you know, just what the substance of that is, because ultimately, and it begins with people being attracted to those ideas. And if young men are lost and finding life meaningless, wandering around looking for a friend, they're sitting targets for groups like this to be able to indoctrinate them into this sort of distorted view. And so it's important that you get to the core of those beliefs that allow that sort of thing to happen. I mean, it's just a shame that person didn't develop more sophisticated thinking about what he was sort of told. Okay.
And is there a line between discussing the dangers and inciting fear in the community?
Well, I think it depends how you go about it. I mean, I think it's important that you challenge these views, but respectfully. I mean, you don't resort to the screaming, the yelling, the confrontational tactics that they do. I mean, I've been in public forums where I've been in my talks I've given on stuff like that have been attacked by people, and they just demonstrate the very behaviour you're talking about, and that's simply what I point out. I said, look, I'm happy to have a discussion with you, and I'm happy to debate the ideas, but if you're going to scream at me and yell at me and talk over the top of me and just become loud and belligerent, well, I mean, that just demonstrates my point, doesn't it? I mean, end of story.
And that's something you get from all sides of politics, isn't it, at various points?
Well, yeah, yeah.
So at a community level, are there things that we can do every day to, I guess, raise the safety level?
Yeah, well, I think it is important in the public domain like this that people, as I said, wake up, that people, whatever they're told by by these sorts of groups and these sorts of messages is to think about it and think about what does that actually mean. Because and if we're saying, well, we've just got to tell people to go back to where they came from and we're not going to let them in, and the more that these people incite hatred and vilification and demonize others, then clearly, if you're a thinking person and you think about this thing in other than black and white terms and reactionary terms, just because you're fearful, therefore I'll agree with you, that's when you begin to say, well, hang on a minute, will what you're proposing actually help society or will it actually harm it?
And
because
in the
solutions will harm. Yeah, the solutions lead to harm. That's the point.
I'm wondering too about your thoughts about the long term. We've seen reports today of security officials saying that we've got an inconsistent approach across law enforcement agencies in Australia in dealing with right-wing extremist groups. Mm. What could we do better there?
Well, it's unbalanced. As I said, the bulk of the money goes to terrorism because that's been the flavour of the month. But that's, I've always had the view that the sleeping giant here has been right-wing extremism. And now we're obviously seeing some of it coming to fruition, which is tragic, and I'm really quite sad that prediction is bearing out. Well, they need to invest money at the front end because it's still at the back end. I mean, there's a lot of tools out there for what I call risk assessment when you're looking at they've notified about someone who's planning something, or they've gone and bought a gun, or they may have been spruiking in a public place about their hatred of Muslims and so forth, or jihadists talking about their hatred of Westerners. So, I mean, police then they need to have evidence, so they need that behavioural stuff. But by the time they get to the behavioural analysis, the person is already close to pressing the bomb, okay? You need to start at the other end and look at risk susceptibility and the people who are susceptible to these things, and that's the sort of group we've identified in terms of young white males. They are susceptible to these ideas, and as I said, you don't need to be alarmist about that. You're just simply saying, and as I've said before, there are a lot of people with extreme views, and therefore you need to find the sort of haystack that's the most is most likely to hold the needle, because there's lots of haystacks out there, and you can do that by using the fairly sophisticated risk susceptibility tools that can identify the cognitive thinking patterns of people early on who may pose a risk. And if they do, then obviously you do the usual police thing and surveillance and look for evidence that they might be planning something, and you'll pick them up sooner. But as I said, 90% of people will never do anything with their extreme beliefs. They'll just, be a lot of hot air and a lot of letting off steam. But a few will go on. It's very hard to catch the needle in the haystack, but you can do a lot to dissuade people from actually joining the haystack in the first place. So the warning signs, quite clearly from a cognitive point of view, is that cognitive attraction. It's that obsession then. When people become obsessed and start focusing only on it and becoming belligerent and arguing, they're the warning signs. They're the worrying signs. Once they become fixated, it's getting very difficult.
Professor Jeff Dean from Griffith University, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Hilary.